The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's going on, everybody? As you can tell, this is not Brad Rowland. Normally, his dulcet tones are the ones that are gracing these airwaves when we're on the Talking Chop podcast. My name is Eric Cole. You may recognize me from work over at Talking Chop, where I'm the deputy site manager and minor league editor. This is a little bit of a different podcast. We weren't actually planning, at least as far as I'm aware, to have a podcast this week because Brad wasn't going to be available Sunday, and we had kind of covered a lot of the news. Other than the non-tenders, which we'll kind of talk about in a little bit. But we did have some news today. So joining me this evening is Scott Coleman. You can follow him on Twitter at ScottColeman55. And we're going to sit down and talk about the big signing of the Braves today of Cole Hamels. Touching on the non-tender decisions also from earlier this week as well. Scott, how are you, man?
I'm good. I was under the assumption this was the Rafael Ortega released podcast and not the Cole Hamels podcast. And I am not prepared at all.
That's what you get for being in the Central Time Zone, being all messed up and just assuming that, you know, that we're going to talk about Rafael Ortega what I was originally planning on was just reading all the angry tweets I got about Charlie Culberson being non-tendered. That would have been high comedy. I got some really angry ones, some very upsetting DMs and things like that. And I was like, okay, that's what we're doing today. That sounds awesome. But fortunately we don't have to do that. We're just going to get right down to it. This isn't going to be a particularly long podcast, I don't think. It is Scott and I talking, so I guess we could run a little longer. But the big news of the day is that Cole Hamels, formerly of the Texas Rangers and the Cubs, as well as the rival Philadelphia Phillies, who have been making some news today as well, signed a one-year deal with the Braves for $18 million. Scott, I just want to go to this first before we kind of talk about the nitty-gritty bits of this. What was your first impression, like, when you saw this deal? Because my first thought was, that's a lot of money for 1 year Cole Hamels.
You know, it's funny. Hamels was not really on my radar at the start of the winter. And then MLB Trade Rumors in their predictions piece, I think, had the Braves signing Hamels to a two-year deal and $30 million. And that, you know, kind of perked my interest. And I looked into him a bit. And he was somebody who made sense if they were looking for a veteran innings eater and somebody who then came out and said he was looking at a short-term deal with a contending team. He wants to get back to the World Series. Of course, he won one and was a World Series MVP with the Phillies once upon a time. But he had kind of fallen off my radar for a couple of weeks. So, you know, it wasn't like a stunning name. You know, it wasn't like they just grabbed somebody from a team or a player who was completely off everybody's radar. He was kind of linked to the Braves early on. And it makes sense. This is a move as unlike a move that Will Smith was for the front office, you know, being aggressive and signing a reliever to a big contract. Hamels kind of fits what Anthopoulos is looking for. 1 year deal. It's been said a million times. You can't go wrong with a 1 year deal. $18 million is a little high, but it does sound like there were a handful of teams, maybe six or seven, who were pursuing him. And sometimes you have to pay an extra million or two if you want to get a deal done. And then, you, as you alluded to, just seeing how the starting pitching market has gone so far, Zach Wheeler getting $120 million today. I think that's just a little too rich for what the Braves are looking to do. So ultimately, you know, I'm fine with the deal. I think there's a limited upside that comes with a 36-year-old lefty like Hamels, but I also think he'll bring plenty of value to this team, and you can do a lot worse when you're looking for a middle of the rotation starter.
Yeah, the deal is, feels to me very similar to the Dallas Keuchel deal, and you know, Brad, when we were talking about this, Brad made notes kind of to us to go through, and he notes that as well. It's just that, you know, am I particularly thrilled about giving this kind of money to this kind of pitcher, an older guy? Probably not, but you're right, is that there's really not that many bad one-year deals that you can sign. Really, the worst ones are the ones that, like, you sign a player who you know is actively going to be bad, and it has nothing to do with the money. It has to do with the fact that that guy is going to be playing a certain spot that you don't want. And Hamels is just not that guy. You know, he's not the guaranteed 200 innings guy anymore, because he's dealt with some injuries. Had an oblique injury last year, for example, you know, and he's had a couple injuries here and there, like in recent years, but for the most part, he's like you said, he's an inning stalwart. He's going to put up good value. He's, again, I don't think he's that 4 or 5 win pitcher anymore. Obviously, if he's a 4 or 5 win pitcher, then this is a steal for the Braves.
Yeah. They're golden.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that, unless I'm mistaken, they can offer him the qualifying offer if he is really good. So, you know, really it has kind of a club option for the same amount of money, more or less. Tacked on. Well, I say that there is a possible second year, if assuming he doesn't turn down the qualifying offer. I can't imagine a world where if they offered him the qualifying offer that he would turn it down, given his age, because I don't see him going back on the market and getting, you know, like a 3-year, you know, $50+ million deal or anything like that, unless he was insanely good next year. So, you know, there's a chance that this could turn into a more than just 1 year. It sounds like that he was, you know, had several teams going after him, and that he was looking to go and get on a contending team, and he really likes the young pitching staff that he can help mentor. You know, a guy like Max Fried seems going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of value back, you know, in terms of what he can learn from Hamels, because, you know, say what you want to about Hamels, but, you know, that is a guy that knows how to pitch and has pitched well for a long time. And when you have guys who, you know, just may need tweaks in here and there just to kind of harness their arsenal, particularly as good at the stuff as a guy like Fried would be, he has a lot of value in that regard.
Yeah.
$18 million's a lot.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, it is. No, it is. I mean, I think it was more money than I was expecting, I think, is probably what I'll say.
Well, yeah, and my initial thought, for whatever reason, I just thought he was projected to get less. You know what I mean? Like, the projections I ended up seeing were like 2 and 30, or like 2 and 28, 2 and 30. So this is a little bit of an overpay, but again, not over you overpaying a little bit, because you're in a little bit of a bidding war in what has turned into a very active free agent market, which is really bizarre to see, given what we saw the last two off seasons. Like, all of a sudden, all these, like, free agents are signing for real money early in the off season, whereas last year, like, a guy like Hamels, I would have not been surprised if he would have stuck around until, you know, January or February, trying to, like, hold out for a really good deal. But as it turns out, you know, he ended up getting a good deal for himself early on in the offseason. And the other thing is that you might have to pay a little bit more to get him to accept a one-year deal, just in general. Because he might have gotten, I would actually wager that someone did offer him 2 years somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want him to take the one-year deal, then maybe you have to make that 1 year particularly rich for him. We'll see as to kind of how this ultimately turns out. He's going to have to put up a year very similar to what he put up last year to like justify this contract, which, again, like a 2.5 F4 season is perfectly fine. You're not signing this guy to be the front of the rotation guy, but he's the guy that fills out your rotation pretty well. My question, and it's one that's kind of alluded to elsewhere, is this it for the Braves in terms of starting pitching? Do you think that this is the move they make and they're done?
I lean towards yes as of today, although I've had no feel for this front office this winter. You know, if
same,
it sure felt like they had to go out and get at least one veteran innings eater, because you lose Julio Teheran, you lose 4 months of Dallas Keuchel, and anytime you're dealing with, no matter how good they are, guys like Mike Soroka, Max Fried, and the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Mike Foltynewicz, they had to go out and get somebody who they could, you know, you never know with pitcher injuries, right? But somebody who historically has been pretty healthy. I will say this about Hamels. You know, his numbers as a whole in 2019 weren't excellent, but he was really, really good through the first maybe 3 months of the season, and then he had the oblique injury, which has bothered him in past years. If I remember right, he had a sub-3 ERA right around the All-Star break. And then as the Cubs kind of fell apart, it sounds like either he or the Cubs training staff rushed him back, and he was really bad. He made 10 starts, and he had an ERA above 5, and I believe he eventually went back on the injured list and then came back for a start or two as the Cubs were trying to hang on. And once he was fully healthy, he looked more like the guy who had the sub-3 ERA as he did at the beginning of the year. Now, who knows what level he'll be at. He is a guy who is familiar, of course, with the NL East, though it's been a few years. A guy who has pitched in the South. He was with the Rangers for a while, so it's not going to be a culture shock or a weather shock. I think that can be a real thing for pitchers. And ultimately, if he's the guy who he's been since he got out of Texas last summer, you know, you've made 40 starts with the Cubs, a 3.3 ERA, 3.86 FIP, struck out about a batter per inning. A reasonable walk rate of 3.25/9, you can do a lot worse than those numbers. And if he's the guy who, as you said, he's probably not the frontline ace anymore, but if you can slot him in as your third or fourth, maybe even if he taps into that first half of 2019 and becomes more of a number two starter behind Soroka, you can do a lot worse. And in, you know, again, a one-year deal for $18 million, sure, you know, maybe it seems a little high. But if you were really wanting to get the guy at $16 million, but not $18 million, what's $2 million between friends, right?
Well, I mean, it's not our money. That's for
as
sure.
We say, right? Yeah, it's not my money. I'm not paying the check.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I think you're right in terms of especially when like Zach Wheeler's market, and over the last few like 48 hours or so, it became apparent. Like once we were like everyone was saying that Wheeler was going to get 9 figures, I was like, okay, well the Braves just aren't going to pay that. You know, that's a guy that you know has some red flags of his own, and if he's getting 5 years and that kind of money, it just didn't seem very likely that they were going to sign him. Same thing goes for Bumgarner. I think they're just going to be out on him because I don't think that Bumgarner is going to. I think he's going to be in relatively the same ballpark as Wheeler, even with the qualifying offer attached. I think there's going to be a team that's going to pay him that around that much, certainly on a per year basis. And I think he'll get 4 or 5 years, and in which case, then you know, it's probably smart for the Braves not to be in that market, and they probably made the right move. One question I do have, and again, this kind of gets to some payroll questions that we're going to have later on, is that is this deal like for $18 million you get Cole Hamels? Is this like realistically that much of an improvement over just exercising Julio Teheran's option? Because that's a thought that kind of crossed my mind, is that what they're looking for is an innings eater who doesn't have a ton of upside. And, you know, say what you want to about Julio, but he was able to do that. So I guess, you know, like, is this realistically that much of an upgrade?
I mean, maybe that's a good question. I mean, would I take Cole Hamels or Julio Teheran next year? I would take Cole Hamels. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And for an extra, what was Julio's option for this year? $11 million, $12 million, something like that.
Something like that.
So for an extra $5 or $6 million, whatever the figure was, I would take Cole Hamels. I think Hamels has, maybe not upside is the right word, but I think certainty is better. Again, we just talked about how good he was in the first half of the year with the Cubs before he got hurt. There is some injury risk, though. Again, I would argue that all pitchers have injury risk. Julio was always very durable, and that was maybe one of his greatest strengths. I mean, if I had to pick between the two, I would take Hamels at $18 million before I would take Julio at $12 million, but maybe I'm in the minority there.
I think it's close. The reason why I allude to the payroll stuff is because the one thing we absolutely don't know right now, and that is because a lot, and you and I are kind of on the same page as this, is that a lot of these moves point to the Braves are much more willing to spend money this offseason in general, and that the payroll figures that we're kind of gotten accustomed to, this is where the Braves want to be around in terms of what their opening day payroll is and what their overall payroll is going to end up being even after the trade deadline. That number has clearly gone up. We don't know how much. And again, you don't spend $13 million a year on Will Smith. You don't spend $18 million a year on Cole Hamels when you have a very glaring and important piece that you have not added to your roster yet, and that's third base. And, you know, Mark Bowman, probably our favorite beat writer for the Braves, he said that already, even with when you're taking into account arbitration projections and kind of, you know, what options have and have not been exercised and all that. Right now, the payroll is already at $130 million, and they don't have a third baseman locked up yet. Now, the elephant in the room here is Josh Donaldson, whose market seems to be very hot. Now, there was a rumor that was floating around by a quote-unquote MLB insider that wasn't verified and doesn't appear to be writing for anybody right now that said that Donaldson's actually is really close to a deal with the Phillies as well for at like 3 years with $23 million per with a club option for a fourth. Obviously that hasn't been picked up by anybody and hasn't gotten much traction at all.
Yeah,
so
I think that was crap.
Yeah, I tend to agree because I think that he'll get $25 million a year for one, and two, just that specific of a rumor to just not be picked up by anybody else or even be hinted at by anybody else, especially in the wake of the Phillies spending that kind of money on Zach Wheeler. I mean, I know that the Phillies have a ton of money just because, and they have more money than sense, as it seems, because they seem to just be throwing a lot of money at problems and they're not really fixing the real problems that they have. But it becomes interesting now because now the Braves, like, look, the Travis d'Arnaud signing is not going to impact the team's payroll or their ability to sign Donaldson or a high caliber third baseman. Right. It's just not going to happen. That's not the amount of money that'll do it. Now, when you talk about an $18 million contract, all of a sudden you start asking questions like how much is the Braves willing to increase their payroll for next year? Because ultimately to get Donaldson, they're going to have a payroll above $150 million next year. What do you think the likelihood that is?
You know, to me, they've made all these moves really aggressively, and I think they must have some kind of a number in their head. You know, as we mentioned right now, payroll is about $130 million. So let's say hypothetically you get Donaldson for 25. I mean, that's $155 million opening day payroll. And we know Anthopoulos is going to want a little bit of money to play with in the middle of the season. So you figure that number could go as high as 160 or so. You also probably have a need, even if you get Donaldson, there might be another piece or two, whether in the bench or a veteran lefty in the bullpen. They're spending. I'm with you. Maybe that number that, you know, Bowman suggested it could be 150 to 160. Maybe we're all off here and they're going to go cheap at third base and try to go elsewhere and use trades or use their prospect depth to make a couple of trades for lesser guys who won't make $25 million. I don't know. It's kind of been the overall theme of the offseason so far is just how high is payroll going to go? It's obviously going to be the highest it's ever been for opening day for the Braves. Especially compared to recent years, and that's an encouraging thing. But as you just said, if you have to spend that money wisely, and if for some reason you don't get Donaldson, I think this offseason takes on a whole different beast. I think they'd be willing to spend on Donaldson. I think I don't think they would have made all these moves if they were 100% certain they weren't going to reunite with Donaldson. And ultimately, it's just a matter of how high they're willing to go with opening day. They do have the benefit, as we know. You know, they had three playoff games last year, and those tickets, you know, that adds up in a hurry. And you would like to think that as teams become more and more of a World Series contender and obviously winning back-to-back division titles, they have the money. We've known for years they've had the money. Now they're really kind of putting their pedal to the metal, and I would hope that if the right Donaldson deal comes along, they say yes and they go for it, because right now you have a roster that is really good, but it is very clearly missing an impact bat or two in the middle of the order.
I agree with those. I agree with your general assessment. Here's my concern right now is that before Mike Moustakas signed with the Reds, the Braves had multiple paths they could take. They could go with a slightly cheaper option at third base, which is, turns out it wouldn't have been that much cheaper.
Yeah,
because Moustakas got a, yeah, he got paid by a team that I'm not really sure needs to be paying that player that deal, just because like they're okay at third base. And if you want to pay a second baseman that much, then, I mean, look, that's a team that's trying their best to go for it, and they have some reason to think that that's probably a good idea with what the Cubs are projected to be doing. Looks like they're going to be moving some guys. You know, the Cardinals don't seem as, world beaters. And the Reds were a much better baseball team than their record indicated last year. But, you know, in close games, they had the worst luck, but they have a good bullpen. They have some good guys at the top of that rotation, and they have some bats in that lineup. You know, Joey Votto is still a baseball player. He can still play pretty well. And, you know, if you can fill out that lineup a little bit more, you know, in addition to Suarez and other guys, you know, there's a reason to think that they should be able to go for it. Now, why they went for Moustakas and paid him that much money, a little bit unclear to me. But once he's off the market, that kind of narrows the options a bit. And I feel like that this deal does narrow their options more in terms of what are viable paths to a successful offseason. Because you can't really go after – you can't go after a Zach Wheeler type. It doesn't seem likely you go after a Madison Bumgarner now. And they were probably never in the market for a guy like Garrett Cole or someone like that for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that it sounds like Garrett Cole seems very interested in being on the West Coast. And also, he's going to be making a ton of money over a lot of years and giving that much money to starting pitching. Same goes for Steven Strasburg. It's, you know, it's really hard to put that kind of money into a pitcher in general for that many years, which is what those guys are going to get. So now you have your rotation more or less kind of, you've added your veteran guy. You'll probably play a young guy in your fifth spot. So now your options are make a trade that we can't project. We just don't know. I mean, I get asked all the time, you know, are the Braves going to trade for Francisco Lindor? And if that's the case, you know, does that mean that you don't necessarily have to get a big time third baseman? I assume that's possible. It sounds like Lindor is certainly going to get traded. I don't know if it's going to be the Braves, if for no other reason that I think half the league is going to be looking into getting Francisco Lindor on their team. And same for a lot of the other one-year guys, whether it be Chris Bryant, you know, whether or not you get 1 or 2 years of him is a little bit, you know, iffy. Same thing for Mookie Betts, guys like that. The level of availability they have and what the price is going to be are all things we just don't know yet. And I think we're going to get some of those rumors as to kind of what these teams are asking for these guys and how motivated they are to move them coming out of the winter meetings. Because right now, in terms of what the prices we're looking at and what, you know, it's ultimately being discussed, it's just been very quiet in that regard. What is known is that they're available in some various form.
Well, and, you know, we talked about free agency so far and it's been moving, but as you just kind of mentioned, it's been pretty healthy for the starting pitchers and for relievers, but there really hasn't been much movement of any kind for position players, whether in free agency or in trade. So I do
other
think
than Moustakas, yeah.
Other than Moustakas, who, you know, good for him, he got paid. You know, I will say, I think Anthopoulos and the front office are in a pretty good spot now. It's the first week of December. The winter meetings start in 4 days, and they have more or less addressed every hole on the roster with the exception of third base. And it is a big hole, to be sure. But other than addressing third and figuring out the power bat situation, whether it's going to be at third or at a different position, I think they've crossed off a lot of items on their list. It's not like they're going to go to the winter meetings still needing a back end reliever, a starting pitcher, you know, whatever it may be. I do think that's helpful. It sounds like the winter meetings, you just listen to people, and sometimes it's hard to get deals done just because there's so many different things you're working on and people tugging at you. Knowing that I'm sure they'll always be open to listening to other deals that don't involve either third base or a corner outfielder or whatever it may be. But I do think they're in a good position and did well for themselves to kind of get all of this done early on in the offseason and then really be able to focus on the lineup, which has the potential to be really good, though there is some work to be done.
Yeah, and I think that's another really good way of looking at it. When I say that narrowing their focus, it's like they can't simply pivot to, you know, maybe going cheaper at third base and then going big elsewhere. Right now, the option is improve third base unless something crazy happens with a trade, which does seem possible. It's worth mentioning, too, that if payroll becomes a concern, like there are players like Ender and Ciarte or some others on the roster that could feasibly be traded to kind of get a little bit of money off their books to kind of offset some extra money spending they might need to make. Again, entirely possible this could happen. And if that's the case, then, you know, like I said, if you trade a player like Ender and Ciarte or something like that and you get another outfielder that, you know, is maybe a little bit better at the plate for among other things, then, you know, that makes some sense, too. I still think Donaldson, who, you know, was good enough last year, he was announced today as well that he was named the National League Comeback Player of the Year, which I think he was a favorite for that award, you know, coming off his 2018 season where he was hurt for basically most of the season, and to come back and to finish like top 11 in MVP voting, you know, that's a big deal, and he played extraordinarily well. I still think deep down that the Braves are the favorites to sign him, because I think that he is simply going to test this market as much as he can, and he's going to give the Braves a chance to match what he's going to be able to get. Now, whether or not that gets too rich, again, I think that all three of us, you, Brad, and I, have all kind of agreed to like 3 years and like $75 million is kind of where it makes the most sense to like, you know, start wondering if it's worth it or not. And if he gets, you know, if he gets 4-year deal and, you know, nine figures, then he gets 4 years and nine figures, and that's probably going to be too rich. But then the Braves have a problem. You know what I mean? Because like, there's only so many guys that you can trade for or go after, other than a guy like a Chris Bryant, which might be a hard sell given what the Cubs may ask for him in return, plus his outstanding grievance regarding his service time. You know, how much are you willing to give up a guy when you don't know if you're going to get 1 or 2 years from him? When you narrow your focus, it's good because it means that like you can just go, these are the players that are available, whether it be trade or free agency. You know, what's the best deal for us? The downside being is that you can't pivot to another position, or you can't pivot if things don't work out the way you want. It's interesting. It's interesting to me for sure.
No, it is. This has been a fascinating offseason so far. And we talked, you and I and a lot of folks talked about just how important this offseason has been. And let me ask you this. So, you know, the offseason started about a month ago today. If you know everything you know now with Will Smith, Chris Martin, Darren O'Day, Hamels, etc., what would you grade the offseason so far? Like, how are you feeling, you know, 10 being holy cow, this team, I'm ready to rock, or, I mean, it'd be hard to give it a 1, right? But more of like a lower score of, I don't know, they just haven't added a ton of high impact or high ceiling guys so far.
I'm in that 6.5 to 7 range because, look, is the bullpen better than it was last year? Absolutely yes. Is the rotation better than it was last year? Debatably yes. It's close. Right. Like, I think at the end of it'll be marginally better.
I mean, I would put, if I had to bet, I would say Hamels will have a better 2020 than what Keuchel and Julio gave them last year.
That sounds about right. And again, you know, the wild card is there's two wild cards. One, if Fulte turns back into 2018 Fulte, then all of a sudden that's the biggest upgrade you can make.
You're in great shape.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden you have Soroka, Hamels, Fried, and Fulte, you know, whoever the fifth starter is, it doesn't nearly matter nearly as much. You know what I mean? Because on that fifth day, you know, sometimes, you know, well, it's okay because the other four guys are really doing well. The lineup is the biggest question. And that's the only reason why I give it a 6.5 or a 7 is simply because they've made improvements in a lot of areas. Like, you know, the Darnold Flowers battery, I don't think it's going to be as good for the chunk of the season where McCann was, like, still playing pretty well. In addition to Flowers playing reasonably well, the end of the season catching platoon was like really bad, especially at the plate. So I don't think that gap is going to be as big as some people think, simply because I think that they've almost forgotten that like for like a third of the season, Brian McCann was, you know, a shell of himself. And obviously Tyler Flowers had a lot of struggles. I do like the pairing between those two, and I think they'll perform reasonably well. They might not be the best offensive forces, but it does put a lot of onus then on making sure you get this third base choice right. And if you get it and there's a way to grade it down based on that third base choice as a result.
Yeah, right. So it's kind of like an in-progress report card, you know, like we'll see. I mean, maybe in another month we can really answer this question. If they go out, you know, if they get Donaldson, I think it's hard to argue this winter wasn't a big success. They went out and spent a ton of money. They have a similar team to last year, but significantly improved the bullpen and the potential for the rotation to be better. You know, I think you can also argue, though, that, again, if they don't get Donaldson, then all of a sudden they're going to have to really scramble and figure out what they're going to do. But anyway, I was just curious to get some people had talked about the offseason as a whole so far, and the Braves have been probably the most aggressive team in baseball of anybody, which is enjoyable from a fan and writing perspective.
Yeah, they're certainly in that conversation, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are teams who truly haven't done anything so far. So you compare that, and for better or worse. I mean, just because the Braves are spending money doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, it's nice to see them being aggressive and improving the roster. And now they just have this one very big decision to make. Maybe it's Donaldson, maybe it's not. But one way or the other, they have to address that position.
Yeah, I agree. And again, that is one of those things, too, where if they don't address this position, like, it's not like my grade stays at a 6.5, because all of a sudden then your lineup, the top third is very good, the bottom two thirds is suspect at best. You know, that extra bat is a big deal. And, you know, given that third base is the slot where you'll be upgrading, again, excluding trades and things like that, like the trade rumors that are out there right now are like basically non-existent. You know, again, all we hear about is like some guys are available, but what actual prices are being discussed, like what's actually reasonable to expect, that's the tough thing. in terms of, you know, expecting what's going to happen on the trade market, because I mean, this free agent market is getting pretty rich and it's bizarre. I mean, like, you know, a lot of these deals, you know, Grandal got more than I thought he was going to get. You know, Zach Wheeler got significantly more than I thought he was going to get. Mostakis got more than I thought he was going to get. And I think that was true of a lot of guys.
Yeah, so, no, it's been a good winter if you're a free agent. You know, while this has been a fun free agency so far, all the big dogs are still out there. I mean, you know, Anthony Rendon, whether he does a 5-year deal or a 10-year deal, he's going to get paid ridiculously. Strasburg, Cole, you know, you name it, those guys are going to get paid. So it's been a lot of fun so far.
So that's generally our thoughts on the Cole Hamill signing. I do want to touch on the non-tender decisions before we sign this thing off. Again, it's going to be a little bit shorter. The Braves removed 3 guys from their roster, 2 of which were non-tenders, 1 of which was really more of a release simply because he wasn't an arbitration eligible guy. Charlie Culberson, John Ryan Murphy, and Rafael Ortega. Now, Culberson is the one that had people getting us the most amount of yelled at. But when we come back from this next break, we're going to talk a little bit about our thoughts in terms of what we think about these decisions and ultimately kind of where this puts the Braves roster.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, guys, before we let you guys go, we're going to talk about some non-tender decisions. As we alluded before the break, the Braves did make 3 moves with their roster. Charlie Culberson, John Ryan Murphy, and Rafael Ortega are no longer under contract from the Braves. That doesn't mean that they're going to be forever not Braves. A lot of things can happen. They could just be signed for less money back, et cetera, et cetera. Let's talk about Charlie Culberson first, because the other 2 games, I honestly think we both probably expected to be no longer with the team. I guess the first question is the easiest one to ask, and that is, if it was your decision, would you have non-tendered him?
I would have tendered him just because knowing that you can, you know, get rid of him in another, you know, in a couple of months during spring training and only have to pay 10 or 20% of his deal. I was surprised. I mean, Brad and I discussed at length on Sunday about all the tender options, and he was somebody who wasn't really on my radar. I thought they were going to bring him back. And even if the production last year wasn't great, as much as Anthopoulos preaches about having a strong clubhouse and veteran leadership, you know, that's kind of Culberson's strongest point, that and his versatility. Again, he didn't have a great year offensively, and defensively he's okay. You know, the versatility is nice, but it's not like he's an all-world defender or anything like that. So I was surprised. What about you?
I was a little surprised because, especially when you have 26-man rosters now, a guy with like that extra versatility seems to have extra value. And as a bench bat, you can do far worse than Charlie Culberson. You just can. Like, it's just like, considering what he is, he's fine. But I do think that there's a lot of people, and they are very loud, that think that he is more than what he is. Yes, he is a good clubhouse presence. Yes, he is a local guy. And yes, he had some big moments as a Brave. And, you know, people talk about him as Charlie Clutch and all this other stuff, but he was not good last season, period. And one of the things I think that really entered into the decision with him is, one, he doesn't have any minor league options left, whereas Johan Camargo, who fills a similar role that he does, has 2 minor league options left, which kind of gives them some more roster flexibility, whereas he does not. Neither one of those guys can play backup shortstop. And the reason why we know that is because they were so bad trying to do so when Dansby went down last year that the Braves actually had to go and sign Echevarria off the junk heap last year. and he ended up being, and look, Echevarria was very good.
Yeah, like,
if they signed him as a bench bat to be the backup shortstop and to, you know, pop in here and there, that would be completely fine with me. I think he did.
Yep,
I think,
same here.
Yeah, really good defender. Again, no issues. No issues if that's the path that they took. So combined with the fact that he's not a backup shortstop, and as a result, you don't really have a great option as a backup shortstop right now. I mean, you can put Camargo over there, but as we've seen, that is not the most desirable outcome, right?
Put him over there and pray that a ball doesn't get hit his way, because he was really rough there last year.
Yeah, he had, especially right before he got sent down to Gwinnett. Like it was like watching a statue play it, and yeah. I don't think he's that bad. Sure. I don't, but I also think that it's worth exploring options that could actually play the position. Now, in terms of like, you know, how good and how clutch he was, there are very moments, you know, like walk off home runs, you know, especially in 2018 where he seemed to hit one every week, and it was hysterically funny almost. It became comical. This is a guy that had a not a good year last year, had a 134 WRC plus in low leverage situations last year. His WRC plus in medium leverage situations was -1. And in high leverage situations, in those quote unquote clutch situations, it was -55. That is not good. Now, look, he made that great throw to home. And, you know, those are great moments. And that is what makes baseball really fun, is that sometimes players who aren't necessarily heroes on a day-to-day basis, and they kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, you get those, you know, winning 7 out of 10 streaks. But every once in a while, a game that you weren't supposed to win, a guy like Rafael Ortega, who hit the grand slam against the Dodgers, or a Charlie Culberson, goes against expectations and does something. But the reality about what Charlie Culberson is as a player, beyond the clubhouse stuff, which again has value, and I probably would have tendered him a contract if I'm just being honest.
Yeah, me too.
Depending on what the options were out there. But his wasn't a name that was like even really on my radar either, in terms of, you know, taking him off the roster. There may be reasons for it. And again, they might sign him to a deal for less than what he was going to make next season to bring him back. That could absolutely happen. It wouldn't shock me, you know, especially if they circle back and they realize that they just couldn't find someone else that they liked liked better than him. But if you're looking at his production, it's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, again, maybe we it's always hard to get a real read on this front office. But yeah, I mean, again, Culberson was not a guy. He had no prospect pedigree. He was kind of a career 4A player with the Dodgers. And then, of course, he came over when the Thopolis came over. And to be clear, Culberson had some terrific moments. I mean, there were times he was better in 2018 than 19. He was so big for that 2018 team. You mentioned the heroic throw to the plate in 2019. You know, he had some great moments. I think if he has played his final game with the Braves, he'll be remembered very fondly. But as you said, it's not completely closing the door on him. If he's still looking for a job in January or February and the Braves are still interested, maybe they reunite and pay him $1.5 million, which is what he probably would have got in arbitration anyway.
Yeah, and again, I think a lot of the anger comes from the quote-unquote, like, the local kid doing good by his favorite team growing up type thing. And I get that. I truly do. But I think that a lot of the reaction, like, I had people tweeting at me saying that, like, the Braves don't care at all. They're not going to win the World Series now. You know, how dare they? He was one of the, you know, whether he was their favorite player or he was, like, one of the more important players on the roster, it's going to ruin clubhouse chemistry. They're going to lose the locker room now that they've gotten rid of him. I just don't think any of those things are going to happen. I just don't.
No.
Yeah. And again, it is okay, and it's perfectly reasonable to really like him, but there's a reason why he was a bench bat, there's a reason why he wasn't playing every day, and there are real baseball reasons why you make this decision, particularly from a roster construction perspective, when you have certain needs and you're wanting a certain amount of roster flexibility from your bench spots, whether it be minor league options or the ability to play certain positions that need coverage. Because, look, I mean, Dansby's a guy that's just been that keeps getting hurt one way or the other. And he's not a guy that necessarily springs right back into action when he gets hurt either. So if you need to have a backup shortstop who can play for a while, at the very least making sure that he can catch and make all the catches and make all the throws, even if they might not hit particularly well. And, that, you know, between Culberson and Camargo, that guy's not on the roster. He's just not between those guys. The other two names that were that are currently no longer with the Braves anyway, Giant Ryan Murphy, catcher that they acquired the trade deadline. He was always going to get removed, if for no other reason that they just added William Contreras to the 40-man roster. Alex Jackson's already on the 40-man roster, and then they have two catchers at the major league level. You know, he was just not a guy that was ever going to see the time, you know, see playing time. And they need some 40-man slots. If they plan on doing anything in the Rule 5 draft, they weren't going to have, you know, any space to do that. And plus, we actually have, you know, some other holes that need to be filled, third base notably, which we talked about quite a bit. in addition to possibly some other bench spots, a lefty bat or something like that. You know, that these are holes that need to be filled, and, you know, to have 40-man spots for guys like that is important. And Rafael Ortega, who wasn't technically a non-tender because he wasn't, like, an arbitration-eligible guy, he's just been released. And, you know, he's a guy, he's approaching 30. And, you know, he had a really fun year in AAA, kind of came out of nowhere and had this power that, you know, no one thought he had, and had a great moment against the Dodgers.
One of the biggest swings of the whole season. That was awesome. Good for him.
Yeah, and, hey, there's not a... He was an interesting guy, and, you know, he did draw some walks as a pinch hitter, but really didn't do much else beyond that grand slam. So, you know, wish him the best. You know, again, these are two guys that we were kind of expecting to no longer be on the roster.
Yeah.
Some notable guys that didn't get non-tender that were rumored, you know, Shane Green was the hot name for a little while, is that they were thinking about it because of the amount of money he was going to be making. But it sounds like the Braves are instead just much more content just to have, I think, one of the better bullpens in the National League. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah. I mean, at least on paper. Yeah. I think with the Shane Green thing, I mean, Mark Bowman does a great job. He's kind of the only one who has realistically mentioned Green as a non-tender candidate. And whether that was accurate or not, I do think, I mean, it just seemed kind of silly to invest all this money in the bullpen, bring back Chris Martin, add Will Smith, bring back O'Day, than to just boot Shane Green after 2.5 months. You know, it just seemed odd. So I'm glad that they ponied up the $6 or $7 million he's going to eventually get.
Yeah, I agree. Again, it just didn't make much sense. Like, again, it would require a very specific set of circumstances where they needed a lot of money to do something that maybe you non-tender them then. And I don't know what that signals in terms of that, in terms of what their payroll expectations are and what they think they're going to be able to spend. It's not just simply what they're willing to spend, but they actually have to be able to do it. They actually have to get the guys in the uniform. And, you know, if you feel like, you know, that $6 or $7 million that Green's going to end up getting isn't going to make or break you, then, you know, that tells us some things, but a lot of those things don't necessarily agree with one another. More just like there's some options on the table now. And as it stands right now, the Braves have a really, really good bullpen, which is a nice thing to say because the last couple years it has been, we'll say suspect at best. So, you know, again, to close everything out with a Hamill signing, it looks like the rotation's going to be pretty good. It has a chance to be really good if some other guys, particularly faulty, bounce back and Cole Hamels turns into the first half Cole Hamels and is much less in common with the second half version that was where he was hurt. And then we also have, you know, faulty bounce back. That has a chance to be really good. It kind of comes down to what we've been saying for a long time, and that is what's going to happen at third base. Because if that happens and all of a sudden you have, you know, four real hitters in that lineup in addition to other support staff that could feasibly bounce back and do something, then this team is going to get really interesting really quick.
Yeah,
if they don't.
Good roster.
But if opening day and it's Austin Riley and Johan Camargo platooning at third or something, it gets much more risky. I don't say it's not, certainly not impossible, because again, I still really like Austin Riley, and we've seen Johan Camargo be a really good baseball player. But if that's what they end up having to roll with, and they make, you know, some like minor moves elsewhere and don't really, you know, take that next step to kind of add that extra big bat, it becomes much less certain as to how well they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think they've done, as we said, a really nice job kind of filling out all the accessory pieces. But now they really need to focus. And I think that's pretty clear. They took care of the bullpen early. They figured out a platoon mate for Flowers. Now it's time to really figure out the lineup. And even if they don't get Donaldson and don't get Anthony Rendon, which is lesser and lesser, but we can dream, right? Even if they lose out on Donaldson, if somebody says, hey, here's 4 years and $105 million or something insane, they still have options, right? Like, it's not like they're putting all their eggs in the Donaldson basket. They're going to have to get creative, and, you know, you and I could probably ramble for 3 hours at all the different things they could do if Donaldson signed somewhere else. But ultimately, they do have options. They have a good farm system. We presume still have money to make a deal work. So, you know, I just want to make sure it's not Donaldson or bust. It would certainly help. I think he's probably the best option, all things considered, with contract cost and what it would cost to trade for a third baseman with prospects. But, you know, there are options out there. And again, it's only the first week of December. There's plenty of time to make a move.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So to those who are becoming anxious, given that, like, you know, the amount of money the Braves have been throwing around and wondering how much money they have left and considering the holes they have, really important to note that there are still going to be plenty of really interesting names, both on the free agent and trade market, that could round out this roster really well. So even if the winter meetings come and go, and you know Josh Donaldson isn't a Brave, and you know Anthony Rendon isn't a Brave, and the Braves haven't made any trades over the next week or so, that doesn't mean anything. You know, ultimately what comes down to is what this team looks like going into spring training. That's the most important, and that's going to be the most important consideration. Is we're going to be a little bit patient and then be reminded of the fact that, you know, there's a lot of teams that haven't done anything, and the Braves have very clearly been one of the most aggressive teams. I mean, there's been some other teams that have been, you know, certainly been trying to be aggressive, the Padres, the White Sox, other teams like that, who are certainly trying to make moves. But in terms of really filling the needs that they wanted to fill and getting really some, like, very interesting, high, potentially high-impact guys, the Braves have done really well for themselves so far. It's an incomplete grade right now, but they're really in a position now where if they just make that one last move, then this is a very successful offseason, and they're going to have a really fun 2019 season versus some other teams that seemingly are just spinning their wheels, particularly in the division, and who could either be significantly worse or not really doing the things they need to improve it at all. So still really like where the Braves are at.
Me too. And, you know, again, it's the front page of MLB.com today was talking about the arms race in the National League East. And, you know, you mentioned the other teams, and obviously the Nationals won a World Series, and they have a great core. Even if, you know, they lose Rendon and or Strasburg, I think there's still enough on that roster, and they're going to spend money. They've been competitive for years now, and there's a reason for it. You know, the Mets, who knows what the Mets are going to do. But again, I think the Mets quietly, despite some of the struggles they had, the Mets won 86 games last year. So it's not like they just have this miserable lineup. And I think with that pitching they have, even losing Wheeler, with the pitching they have, they're going to be competitive. And then the Phillies are apparently just trying to spend so much money to try to fill their holes. You know, again, they won 81 games last year. They had Zach Wheeler. I still think that roster has significant overhaul to do. But again, it's, you know, it's the National League East. The Braves are good, and everybody else other than the Marlins are good. And it's going to be a real challenge.
Absolutely. And I think it's a good place to end things. So, you know, short version, everything's going to be fine, but there's still work to be done. And the NL East has certainly not been rounded out, and we don't really know what to expect from it just yet. There's a lot of work to be done. Thanks again to all of you who've been listening. We really appreciate all the support. As far as I'm aware, this is going to be the only podcast this week. So don't look for one necessarily on Sunday. We've kind of covered all the newsworthy stuff anyway, barring some other crazy signing, in which case, you know, myself or Brad and or Scott will come back in. You know, if, you know, Anthony Rendon signs in, you know, the next, you know, couple of hours or something, it probably won't happen. I would wager it probably wouldn't happen tonight. But you know, who knows? Maybe it would too. But beyond that, so make sure you're going to checking the following week, where it's going to be back to your regularly scheduled programming, where Brad is going to be having probably Scott or myself on. Or if, you know, maybe we can get a guest on as well. But make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your favorite podcast purveyor is. Make sure that you have us subscribed, and make sure you leave a 5-star review for us. It helps a lot to grow the podcast and make it more visible to other listeners who are looking for content about the Braves. And we really just kind of blown away by all the support and all the listens and downloads that the podcast gets. It really makes it worthwhile that when we put together these podcasts and put all the time into it, that there seems to be a lot of people who are really enjoying it. So thanks again to all of you, and we'll see you next time.